I am blessed to serve in this district, and in doing so, get to experience how awesome people that work here are. And again, we often say when we start talking education, we start talking about teachers, and shame on us. Teachers are critical and they are awesome, but you know, we need everybody that's in food service. We need our maintenance people. We rely on IT, as you well know.
Exactly.
It takes every bit, and if one piece of that wheel is broken or not firing right, however you want to say it, it's a tough deal. And so, you know, everything matters, and the way in which you contribute to something greater than yourself is really, I think, what it's all about.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Dr. Bill Wilson. Bill is the superintendent at Fremont School District RE2 in Florence, Colorado. Bill, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit, Bill, about Fremont School District and your role there.
Our district is located in multiple towns. So in Colorado, it's kind of a bit interesting. But the short version is primary offices are in Florence, but we have school districts currently, or school buildings in both Penrose and Florence, and then serve some smaller towns around that. And we're in a beautiful area of Colorado. We're not technically the mountains, but we are definitely high desert. And you know, I'm very blessed. I wake up and greet the day looking at Pikes Peak and the snow caps, and look out the other side to the wet mountains. And so it really is picturesque. We are, you know, mostly known, I think most people, when they think of Florence, Colorado, and you Google it, Supermax is here. And so, you know, it's like, oh, is that a scary place? And it's like, well, actually, it's probably one of the safer places because of the high level of training of so many of our, community members that work in the penal system, both at Supermax or in...
Oh, so you're super maximum security prisons. Gotcha.
Yeah. You know, it's that whole, who's my neighbor? Well, as far as I know, I think El Chapo is there, you know.
Yeah.
It's probably accurate. I haven't seen him. That's what they say. I'm not going to go, you know, poking my nose. We're just trying to serve our community, and we're semi-rural, I would say. Maybe it is rural. Colorado Springs is about 45 minutes away. So, you know, we're not far from some of those opportunities and options, but we're also, you know, a smaller community. You know, my school district has, you know, 1,250 students. So it's a small size compared to many. To me, it's about the right size. I've always believed, and my experiences are, that most of the bigger schools are trying to create smaller communities within their schools. And so when you get to around that 100 students per grade level, then you can really get to know students and have that relationship, and make sure that you're not missing those students who feel like they're invisible or overlooked, or they're in the spot for it.
Just on a little bit of a side note, several years ago, we were in Colorado Springs and we did the Manitou Incline. And I am proud to say I made it to the top. Took my son 45 minutes, took me 2.5 hours. But I made it.
Well, and see, again, you know, what a great analogy, though, for our schools. I mean, that's part of what we have to understand and acknowledge, is that we all go at different pace. And that why is that a problem? That shouldn't be a problem. You know, even as you look at some of our, you know, our methods of evaluating our students and their reading. Well, they're a slow reader. Well, okay.
Yeah.
They can read.
Yeah.
If they can't read as fast as you think they should, let's not label them, or let's not, you know, let's try it.
Ooh, we can get on a soapbox there.
I don't think so. Congratulations on the incline. And my wife and I are avid hikers and have summited a couple of 14ers, and she was known on one of them as the 50 step lady. because she would, in order to, you know, that last 1,000 feet in particular usually gets pretty intense and not much oxygen, and she would just count in her head, but she would go 50 steps and then she's 50 steps closer and yep. she'd take a
That's
breath
so
or two or seven or whatever.
Seven, yeah. Yeah. I was at 10 steps. I'll be honest with you. I was like, I just got to get 10 more and I got to get 10 more. When I got to the last 45, my son came down and helped me up. Yeah. And that's yeah. special. That's a great analogy too, because sometimes we do need that help. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. And she was being encouraged by, we called him a Sherpa, but this guy was probably at least 10 to 15 years older than we were at the time. And he was coaching a couple of people and encouraging them. And it was almost like a cattle dog or a sheep dog. He was running on up ahead and saying, yeah, come on, and hollering down. And then he'd come back down, walk back down to him and walk
right,
with him for a while.
And then so he climbed it like four times before he got to the top. Wow. Crazy.
Well, you know, from an educational perspective, that's kind of what we do. You know, yeah. you kind of try to keep everybody moving in a positive mm-hmm. direction and growth and learning and let's not get too caught up in whether it takes us 2 hours or 2.5 hours or, you know, whether you're reading by the time you're a second grader or whether, you know, the light comes on at a different time before or after that. And same thing with math. We all know the data's out there. You run into, okay, your mind is not developed enough to really understand algebra yet. It's going to be okay. We'll get there. So.
Right. And you guys have done some really great stuff with special needs. Let's touch on that. Let's start there, because I would love to have you tell our listeners about the in-house stuff that you've got done for transitions in special needs.
Well, again, because of our location, you know, we don't have a lot of available business partners. And so as we think about our students who are transitioning from their high school age, culturally acceptable ages, I guess, if you want to call it that, into the real world, but have some limits, the question is, how do you serve those students and prepare them in a way that they can lead as much of a life that they would like to lead as possible? And so we were struggling to, you know, there are those services out there that you can find partners and they will do this for you. We weren't having much success with that because, again, we didn't have the businesses that were available. So we're in the process. We've got a ways to go. And, you know, again, I'm one of those things that we can always be better. But we are working with our students that have either graduated or about to graduate and providing them additional options and opportunities in the workforce so that they can, you know, work and earn a living, but also have that sense of accomplishment of I am contributing to society. And, you know, whether it's, you know, we've got a couple of students placed in working with agencies, but also some working at, you know, maybe a grocery store or Goodwill, you know, mm-hmm. working and putting them in a spot where they can be successful, they can grow, and they can also contribute without putting them in spots that are going to frustrate either the general community, the customer, or the student themselves. And there's a lot of work in that because it's not just a work study or an apprenticeship mm-hmm. like you would typically have. And so there's just other elements of that you really have to work through and make sure that, like I say, you're doing the kind of preparation to provide them the opportunity to be successful.
And every single one of them is different.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just like you and I are different.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, don't.
No
you
cookie
know.
Cutters here. No cookie cutters. Right. Not in special education. There's no cookie cutters.
Yeah.
Definitely
my,
not. Absolutely.
My wife and I do home improvement projects, and there are certain things that she does and certain things that I do, because if I do them, she's going to look at me and say, I thought you were going to do that. And it's like, well, I did that. And she's like, that's going to have to be redone. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm, Yeah, I'm not going to be successful at that. I don't have that attention to detail. You want to move a wall? That's me. You want to miter cut crown molding? That's you, because I'm good enough.
Well, we were talking about that as we were getting onto the podcast. We have an issue with our Zoom account, and I was telling Bill, I'm like, this is not my area. I have tech people, and two of my tech people are out at appointments. Happens to be my son and my husband, but we have a third, and I'm like, I cannot. I want to help my therapist, and I'm doing a little bit, whatever I can. But I eventually tagged the third person and said, he's got to help you because I can't do it.
I'm not, you know,
and he's a Mac person too. We have our Android and PC people. And then we have our Apple Mac guy. And he actually happens to be the son of one of our therapists. It's so funny. Yes. We're family, you know, just as, but you have people that have, just like in education, just like
great
in
model,
special education.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So one of the other things that we talked a little bit about is funding. Federal funding, and let's talk a little bit, because I know you have lots of experience and lots of knowledge, so I want you to talk a little bit about that and tell us about how does Colorado handle funding in education?
We would have to improve to be poor in terms of our funding of education in Colorado.
And that's heartbreaking.
Well, to some degree, it's definitely heartbreaking, but you know, you can blame whatever you want to blame. Colorado has, you know, passed certain laws and statutes. Our legislature is the only one in the country that has no ability to raise taxes. So they're hamstrung in that regard. Okay, I can grant them that. Mm-hmm. However, we also, over the past 10 years, you know, at least for 7 of those past 10 years, was either the highest growing economy or the highest growing economy in the state or in the country.
In the country, wow.
And during that time, guess what? Education funding didn't really improve. We just ended up with more pet projects and more unfunded mandates and more things that took money or didn't allow money to come into schools. And so, you know, depending on the metric you choose, Colorado's usually in the bottom 5. Certainly in the bottom 10, and seemed to be rather unapologetic about it. So, you know, what I tell my colleagues is we're having the same conversations we've been having in Colorado for the last 10 years, and we owe it to whoever's in our chair 10 years from now to do something so that we're not having the same conversation 10 years from now.
Right.
And, you know, we're battling this movement. And it's coming from both sides of the aisles, and they used to be more quiet about it, and now they're overt. But I think there's a big agenda and a push to no longer have to fund public education, or at least not in a way that's equitable to anyone. And when we start having those conversations, it's more about, look, it's your constitutional obligation. I think it's in every constitution of every state.
Yeah. To educate your people. Yeah.
Yeah, we will. And yet, you know, we're battling against those forces that say, well, there's no money. We don't have money for that. We have to choose between that and Medicaid, or we have to choose between that.
No, you don't. Yeah.
No, it's like, well, or roads, or, you know, and again, Colorado roads, you want to find some horrible roads, go someplace other than the ski slopes, and you'll think you might be, you know.
Michigan's the same way. Yeah.
Horse button days. It's like, oh, these are horrible. Do better with ready mix and a shovel. You know, it's like, so, you know, as we have these conversations, what we're really trying to help people to understand is you're simply underserving, and you're wondering why your workforce isn't your workforce, and it's because you're not funding us. And again, we're expecting our teachers, let alone our paraprofessionals, you know, and our therapists, you're essentially asking them to commit to a life of just above the poverty line, I mean, you can't live and work here on one income.
Right.
Paying our teachers in the, you know, some starting salary still haven't hit $40,000. And it's like, hold it, I've got, you know, 4, usually 5 years of education and a bachelor's degree, maybe a master's degree, and that's what you're going to pay me. And then we're going to expect that as a teacher, you're not either going to get burned out or you're going to go work
somewhere else.
The
pay's both. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we're pretty hamstrung in that regard. And, you know, again, I've always told the legislators, go ahead. Do fully, you audit us every year, which is interesting because some of the bigger schools don't get audited every year, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but come in and take a look. And if you have ideas as to where you think we can change what we do and use our money more efficiently, I'm open to any suggestion. I've only been doing it for 22 years, so I am still open to whatever you think you could do better.
Right.
But, you know, we run a pretty lean machine and, you know, you go back to, you know, you start talking federal funding and, you know, I've been on the Hill, I think every year for the last 6, you know, as a part of those lobbying efforts to say, okay, let's just take IDEA, special ed funding. For Fremont RE2 alone, we're underfunded by their own calculations and what's supposed to happen, we're underfunded $500,000 every year.
Mm-hmm.
Just for special ed, which means that's going to come out of general ed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people kind of blink twice when you say, well, we've got about $18-19 million budget. It's like, well, you ought to be able to make it run on that. And it's like, well, let's break all of that down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, trying to help people to understand that, yeah, what's the cost to heat your house? Okay, now take that times 60 in terms of our square footage. And that's what we pay every month for utilities, you know, and then all of the other pieces and health insurance. You know, I mean, it just, you know, we just roll into that circumstance that says our budgets, you can't really function if you get above 80% people. That's kind of the upper limit. And it's hard to even serve our kids and pay our people and stay within that 80%, because then the other goes towards, you know, you got overhead and then you've got, you know, curricular resources and then again some of these you know, another one of those things that's a passion point for me in my current place is, you know, for our most challenging students that have some behavior challenges and you know, the regular ed classroom's not a good fit for them, we put them in a vehicle and drive them 45 minutes each way to the School of Excellence in Colorado Springs. It's like, well, okay, first of all, we're losing 2 hours of instruction right off the bat every day. Secondly, I'm not sure we're really that safe in taking a more volatilely inclined student and putting them in a vehicle.
Right.
And so what are we doing? And so that's another one of those pieces that we're working on to have both the space and the capacity and the personnel to not do that. Can we do that here? I think we have the space, and now we're working through the processes of saying, okay.
We all feel it. Students are struggling more than ever with emotional and behavioral challenges. Lighthouse Therapy offers virtual, hybrid, and in-person behavioral and mental health support that builds around your school environment. Our licensed professionals are trauma-informed, experienced, and trained to work with K-12 students and staff. You don't get a cookie-cutter approach. You get a partner who listens, adapts, and builds trust. Because when students feel safe and seen, they thrive. Learn how you can get support at your school at lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together.
We have to do something to better serve these students and to, again, create a safe environment at all times for all people, students and employees. So,
yeah,
it's a real challenge. And, you know, to me, it's that whole piece that just says, if we could have our legislators and the powers that be come and experience, truly experience. Pick a school district. I'm not alone. Yeah.
You're not.
I'm not a poster child. I'm not unique. I have my own unique circumstances, but the very issues all come back to typically we're either burning our people out because they are understaffed and we're trying to do more with less, and consequently they can't keep doing it year after year after year, or they get a better job offer, or we simply don't have the capacity to serve the students we need to serve. And then they either go underserved, unserved, or we have a circumstance like that where we put them in a vehicle and drive them 45 minutes and hope that nothing happens between here and there.
And then, you know, they wonder why there's so many fewer people going into education. They wonder why we can't hire. Why are these positions not being filled? Why do our children have anxiety and social emotional issues? And why are we not fixing it? Why? And I love the fact that it always is put on the local school district. Why are you not fixing it? Why are you not taking care of it? Excuse me, but we are a society and it takes a village. And when the village is walking out the door and expecting one group of people who are underfunded, underserved and stressed, but still willing, that's the part that blows me away about educators. And I love that. And I always talk about that is you guys are doing something that nobody else, no other industry would do. Nobody else would do the things in education that our team is doing, which is part of the reason that Brighter Together exists, because there needs to be awareness of what we're expecting and what we're getting and how it's inequitable, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the encouraging piece is, and I think this is almost universal, if you survey the local community on schools, their perception is our schools are doing well. Schools in general are not. And so I think the closer you get to it, you realize the Herculean effort that our people are putting in and the amazing products and benefits that our students become and have access to. But then you get to the state level or, you know, let's not even get too started on the media piece. I think that's intentional. You know, we are saying schools are failing our kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, who's saying that? Well, whether it's the federal government, whether it's this side of the aisle, that side of the aisle, whoever it is.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, okay, hold it. Let's break this down and we can explain to you the fallacy of your contention, as well as maybe illustrate to you where the breakdown's occurring and why, you know, again, state assessments. It's like, to me, go ahead. Trigger me. Let's talk state assessments.
No,
let's not, because again, testing all students the same way on the same day, thinking, you know, again, I can tell you CMAS, what does that tell you? That'll tell you the socioeconomic makeup of my community. That's it. We might be able to move that needle a little with some best practices and so forth. But at the end of the day, you want to compare me with Cherry Creek? We're never going to compare favorably in that regard.
And that's the only metric that they're using to show whether or not you're succeeding or not. Yeah, and they're going to base your funding on that number and then take it to an international level. And we're going to compare your schools, our schools in the United States, to schools in China or pick a country. And they, you know darn well that they're not putting anybody but their brightest kids on their scale. And then we're failing. It's like there's no special education students at all on the test scores that you're getting from China at all.
And even there, they've even conditioned us to say something, and I'm just going to point it out to you. I'm not judging you, but we make those comments of they're only putting their brightest students, and it's sort of like all of our kids are bright.
Yeah,
they just may not be inclined towards the way we do education.
That's another point too. Yeah, how are you testing?
Yeah.
And when you talk about testing, and I'm a therapist, so you know, we say this a million times in an IEP when we're sharing test scores with a parent. A test score is a moment in time that whatever was happening with that child, whether he was feeling good or not, whether he was ready to be tested or not. And we make those caveats to parents all the time. Please understand that we are only using this as a starting point. And yet, when you look at the entire system, oh my goodness, here's Janet on our soapbox complaining because it drives me crazy what they do.
Absolutely
drives me crazy.
It can be a data point, and it can provide some benefit. Let's keep it at the value that it should be.
Yes.
One day, one way, one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How'd you do 3 days later? 15 days later.
Right.
Okay. Hold it. Now if we're flatlining, then all right, now it's time to try a different intervention, a different tactic. Or
and maybe a different test, maybe, you know,
assess in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Multiple
oh, my goodness.
Ways,
it's maddening. It's
so,
absolutely
maddening. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
But, you know, so to me, that's the piece is trying to make sure that all of our students have as much access as humanly possible. And that's what we do. And the funding piece, you know, the other part that is both a testament to educators before us and currently is we still just keep on doing what we do. You know, I've told my colleagues that, you know, if there's a reduction to any further reductions or lack of increase to our funding to keep up with the pace of inflation and rising costs, then we just eliminate those instructional days during the legislative session. And we just closed school for February.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why February? Well, because that's the only way we're going to get some of the people who need to tell the legislature that this is unacceptable is if we're saying, sorry, we don't have the money.
Right.
And so rather than ending the school year early, which is too late, the legislature's already gone, we'll just take February off. Now, the problem is we all know that's not good for kids, and some kids wouldn't eat for a month. And yet, at some point, enough's enough, and you have mm-hmm. to get the attention, and you have to say, hold it. This is a small blip. This is 1 month, and if this 1 month, maybe it's only 2 weeks, will make a big enough difference, then we won't have to deal with this again because they know we're serious and they know we're not just going to keep putting kids in a less beneficial environment because we don't have the money to do it. We're going to say, no, we're not doing this. We got to have more. And we're to that point. We're not doing it that way. And, you know, there's times when I'm 100% serious about that. And then there's those times when I, like many others, it's like, well, we can probably make it work. And so we do. And why would we do that with our most precious commodity? We wouldn't do that with anything else.
We would not.
No chance.
No. No. And that's why we talk about it. That's why, you know, that's why you're here. That's why Brighter Together exists. That's why we need people to understand what is happening in education, not talking heads that just want to take the absolute worst educator in the United States and say, and compare them to everybody, you know, or the worst event that could possibly happen. And this is what's happening at all of our schools. That's not the reality. But that's the comparison that's happening. And it makes me crazy. It really does. So,
well,
you know,
Yeah. And I've always been one who I don't like whiners. So mm-hmm. you have a complaint. Okay. That's great. What's your solution? And so, you know, to me, that's the part that I try to spend most of my energies on is, okay, what is a viable solution?
Right.
And me, you know, our transition program is a viable solution. Again, you look around, it's like, well, I guess we'll figure it out because we know as well as anybody and the other option didn't work or we can't afford the other option. So how do we afford this? How do we make this work? You know, we've got a child care, I wouldn't necessarily call it a crisis, but as in many communities this size and many communities everywhere, it's like, well, we have a lack of childcare. both for our employees and for our community. So we're working towards, you know, a combined effort with that to say, okay, hold it. Maybe we can help this both for our organization, our teachers, and also for our community, because we need more. And so we're working on that too. I can't give you details, you know, yet, but did it before in my last stop, and I think it works. So I think we can do it.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
And so provide our students some opportunities too, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Working with the littles is always fun. It's always fun to work with the little ones.
As many wins as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. My husband used to tease me when I started doing teletherapy back in 2011. That's when I started this journey that I've been on now for a long time, 15 years now. But I can't believe it when I say that. But there you go. I've been a therapist for 31 years. Can't believe it when I say that either.
No.
But, you know, it's like he used to tease me. He was like, you just play games for a living. You just have fun all day long. I hear you and you're laughing. And I was like, yep, that's right. I get to play games and I get to take education to a level with these kids that is fantastic for them. And I tailor it to their needs. And it's super fun. And that's passion, you know, and you just love what you do. And you keep doing it, right? So, yeah, don't you? Yeah, too bad you don't get to play games all day like I do. But I do. I have the experience and the education to play games all day and make it educational and make it fun for my kids. So, hey, you know, life is good.
Well, and that's, again, that's why we have us, the teachers that we have, the educators, you know, the paraprofessionals, the healthcare people. You know, they're just this piece that just says, you know what, I can talk to you about the complaints I have, but I'm also very blessed. You know, we have a great opportunity, and you know, I'm a little long in the tooth myself. You know, I started my 38th year here about 10 days ago, and yet when I look at the ledger, it's still not balanced. You know, people invested into me, and I can't pay them back. I can only pay it forward. And at this point, I'm not done.
I keep doing it.
Yeah. I'm still in arrears, so I'm going to keep going as long as I can, as long as I can make a difference. And, you know, told my wife, if I ever get to be that old fuddy, crusty curmudgeon, just don't even let me out of the house. Just call the office and say, no, he's done, because he doesn't deserve to be there. And it's like,
that reminds me of Back to the Future. Does that guy ever have hair?
Yep.
For those of you that don't know and aren't seeing Bill's bald. I don't know if it's intentional or if you shave it or whatever, but it just reminds me of that Back to the Future when he gets back, you know, he goes back to his high school when his parents were in high school. That guy ever have hair?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it is one of those things. I should have embraced it long before I did, but yeah.
It's okay. The world is better because you are there, Bill. And I have no doubt that the kids and your school is served by you well. So with that in mind, because we could talk for another hour, but we've been doing it for 32 minutes. So I'm gonna wrap it up here. So, Bill, where do people go to learn a little bit more about you and about Fremont School District?
Yeah, our website's going to be our best option, and it's pretty simple. www.re-2.org is the website. I'm on LinkedIn, but again, you can click there and you know, I'm not that interesting. LinkedIn's probably the best option. Just look me up there. And you know, the beauty is the more that we do this, it really isn't about us. It's about how do we serve our kids and how do we make sure they get what they need. And you know, to me, I would just encourage all the listeners to never underestimate the value that they bring, because you know, I am blessed to serve in this district, and in doing so, get to experience how awesome you know, people that work here are. And again, we often say when we start talking education, we start talking about teachers, and shame on us. Teachers are critical and they are awesome, but you know, we need everybody that's in food service. We need our maintenance people. We
bus
rely
drivers.
on IT, as you well know.
Exactly.
It takes every bit, and if one piece of that wheel is broken or not firing right, however you want to say it, it's a tough deal. And so, you know, everything matters, and the way in which you contribute to something greater than yourself is really, I think, what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bill, it has been an absolute pleasure. I knew from the moment that you came on and we started talking, I knew it was going to be a great conversation. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your service to your students. Just we're brighter together, right?
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate what you all do. And you know, you mentioned that you've been doing it since 11. And you know, when we hit COVID, you didn't have to miss a beat. Everybody just took lessons from what you all were already doing.
We tried. We really tried. We tried to help as much as some listened, some did not. I'll tell you that right
can't
now.
Control
so that.
Cannot,
cannot control
that.
No. Nope. And it's interesting you brought that up, but I will say this really fast, that I was on a forum with superintendents and I can't even remember which one it was, but I made the comment, why are you guys not looking to online schools and superintendents with online schools because they've been doing it for 25 years. And the next time I was on there, guess what they had? They had a superintendent from an online school. I was like, yay, if I did nothing else, because they weren't going to listen to me. They weren't going to, but they did listen to. And I think that just that one question hopefully made a difference for some of those kids. So, you know, again, yeah, just grateful to be here, grateful to be able to continue to do what we do. So same thing. Just keep doing it. So God bless you. Thank you for being here. And just thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's an honor.